I have the pleasure of introducing our second speaker here today, Professor Bruce Stewart. Dr. Stewart is a Park Davis Professor of Geriatric Pharmacotherapy and the Director of the Peter LeMay Center on Drug Therapy and Aging at the University of Maryland. He is recently named a Maryland Eminent Scholar for his work on geriatric policy issues, and he has authored or co-authored almost 50 journal articles and policy briefs on prescription drugs and 20 reports, including the chapter in the April 2000 Report to the President on Prescription Drugs. He recently received a Best Paper Award from the Association of Health Services Research, and he has given presentations on prescription drugs in California, Florida, Georgia, Illinois, Maryland, Massachusetts, New Hampshire, New York City, Pennsylvania, Tennessee, and Washington. He's been all over. Stewart's talk today examines six ways that policymakers can determine eligibility for a prescription drug benefit for the elderly. In one of his studies, he found that who benefits from prescription drug coverage depends upon how you define needs. Dr. Stewart will discuss how prescription drug benefits can be designed to meet the needs of different types of families. We have included a copy of his overheads in with your briefing report packet. Welcome, Dr. Stewart.
Thank you very much. It's a real pleasure for me to be here today. I should note that the organizers of this session choose the topics for you, at least the titles for you. And so this title actually was picked by the organizers and not by me. I'm not in a position to tell you how you should determine eligibility for any prescription benefit plan that you might enact here in Wisconsin. But what I can do, I think, is to provide you a little bit of information about how other organizations have done this and what some of the implications of choosing particular eligibility criteria are. So what I'm going to be doing is I'm going to be looking at the individual level characteristics of Medicare beneficiaries. Everything I say today is going to be relating to individuals over the age of 65 or disabled and covered under Medicare in that fashion. I should note that also by way of disclaimer that nothing that I say here today relates to the state of Pennsylvania because they have, if not completely solved their problems in this regard, have gone further than any other state, as Tom Snedden, the speaker who will follow me, will enlighten you on. So with that, let me go ahead. I'm going to be focusing on three issues. First of all, who has coverage and what the implications are of that coverage, who needs coverage most and whether those people have it. And then the final part is the takeaway message, I think, which is really, so what? So what does it matter if people have it or don't have it? The work that we've done for the Commonwealth Fund, for the Assistant Secretary for Planning and Evaluation in the Healthcare Financing Administration is summarized in your briefing book. And you also have a set of slides which contain roughly double the number that I'm going to be showing you here today and go into further details in some of these issues, particularly in terms of the source of coverage and the stability of that coverage. And I'm going to be talking a lot in my allotted 15 minutes about the stability of prescription coverage because it's very easy to look at a population and to say who has it and who doesn't. And it's also important to indicate how often individuals during that period of time actually are covered, as we'll see in just a moment. Next slide, please. Percent of Medicare beneficiaries who had any Medicare or had any prescription coverage rose dramatically between 1993 and 1997, and actually that's reflected in some of the work that David Mott has shown. In 1993, 65% of all Medicare beneficiaries had some source of prescription coverage at some time, and that had increased 10 percentage points to almost 75% of the population in 1997. My data stop at 1997, just as most of those that Dave had given you earlier, and that's the result of having to rely upon data that, in this particular case, are survey data, and require significant work before they're actually published. It's going to be a couple of months before the data source that I've used for this information releases 1998 data, and that's the Medicare Current Beneficiary Survey. Next slide. Having coverage, however, as I've already indicated, does not necessarily mean having stable or reliable coverage. This is a slightly busy chart, but I want to point out the principal elements to it. If you look at these large, or the brownish, I'm not sure where these colors came from. Actually, they're not the ones that I selected. the wonder of Microsoft. Okay, once you, the tall bars here refer to beneficiaries who had coverage for the entire year, 1995 through 1997. As you can see, there is an increase from 51% to 55%. But the point I want to emphasize here are these middle bars right here, from 17.9% to 19.4%. These are individuals who had gaps in coverage. The way we measured coverage for all of the slides in today's presentation, where we restricted it to individuals who were Medicare entitled from January 1st through December 31st of each of the years. In other words, we excluded people who were newly entitled to Medicare, and we excluded individuals who had died during that period of time. It turns out that that sample restriction makes relatively little difference in terms of the characteristics of the population, but it does permit us to identify individuals that have true gaps in coverage, and that's what you see here. About 20% of the Medicare population, if you look at it over a period of a year, have at least some period without coverage in that year. And then if you look at the bars here, you can see that the percentage of the population that has no coverage at all has been declining. I have a number of slides before this one and previous to the last one that indicate source of coverage and the relative proportion of individuals by source of coverage who have full year coverage, stable coverage, and those that have part year coverage. And if I know we have some time later today, and we could go through some of those slides if you're interested. I want to point out in this particular case, though, that the source of coverage and the individuals who have coverage has been actually quite uneven over even a short period of time. If we look at this period, 1993 through 1997, we can see that for the entire Medicare population as a whole, approximately 15% more beneficiaries had coverage in the later year as opposed to the earlier year. But if you break that down by individual characteristics, and I'd be happy to give you additional information on characteristics other than those that are shown here, but it shows some, I think, some slightly disturbing trends. Here we have, we break down individuals according to whether they are currently married or single, and as you can see, in 1993, single individuals actually had the edge over married individuals, but by 1997 it had turned around. So if you happen to be married, the chances of adding prescription coverage over that period were actually quite high. If you were single, there was an increase, but it was much, much lower. If you're in an urban area, it's easier to get coverage. This is through 1997, too. Keep in mind some of the major changes that have occurred in this market, particularly in the Medicare Plus Choice or HMO market, have occurred after 1997. So my guess is that these some of these trends that you see by demographic characteristic are actually magnified over what I'm showing you here today. Growth in the urban area and virtually no growth at all in coverage for rural residents. And this one, individuals who report that their health is very good to excellent have a higher rate of coverage in 1997 than those who indicated that their health was fair or poor, a reversal of what we see in 1993. My guess is also that that has also been exacerbated in 1998 through 2000. So these are some interesting and, as I said, perhaps disturbing trends in terms of the growth of coverage during the 1990s. The reason that I was invited to speak here today was really to answer this question. Do those who need drug coverage have access to it? And again, I'm going to be restricting my comments here to individuals over the age of 65 or disabled and living in a state other than Pennsylvania. So here we go. income is probably the most easily identified characteristic by which somebody can say, can you afford coverage? And if you can't afford coverage, then we should be in a position of providing at least some opportunity for access to coverage for you. There are bills in this state and in many other states that currently don't have a pharmaceutical assistance plan, for putting one in place. Every one of those pharmaceutical assistance plans use some kinds of income criteria. Some, as in the state that I live in, Maryland, have an asset criteria. They're designed to target benefits to those who have limited resources. What we've done here is we've identified two arbitrary cutoffs in terms of trying to identify who has coverage, who doesn't have coverage, and then what the implications of that might be. FPL, incidentally, stands for the federal poverty line. So this is below the federal poverty line or below 150% of the poverty line. We also thought that it was really important, though, to look at some other characteristics that could reasonably be identified as need factors in terms of access to prescription coverage, and there are five additional ones that we identified. First of all, lacking prescription coverage is an obvious one. But we were, given what we had done in terms of the findings that we had seen in terms of the persistence of prescription coverage over time, we thought that it was important to identify individuals not only who had no coverage at a given point in time, but who went for some extended period of time without coverage. These would be individuals that we'd want to take a closer look at. There are always data restrictions in terms of being able to do this, and so the longest period that we could reasonably capture persistent lack of coverage was 2 years. If we were able to do it over a 3 or 4 year period, we would have found higher numbers than the ones that I'm going to show you in a minute. So we've identified the group of individuals who had no prescription coverage for at any time over a 24-month period. We also thought that it was important to identify individuals who had gaps in coverage, because a gap in coverage would indicate that perhaps that coverage was not reliable. We don't know from our data source who was actually forced out of coverage if they happened to have it, or who couldn't under any circumstances afford it if they did have it. But having gaps in coverage is clearly an indicator of instability, and so we wanted to take a look at that, and we identified people who had at least some gap in coverage, had prescription coverage for some time during a two-year period, but also had a gap in coverage. And then another factor that's clearly important here in terms of need is a level of expenditure. Individuals that have very high expenditures for prescription drugs are clearly at a greater economic risk if they were to lose that coverage. And so we had two, actually, criteria for high drug spending. One here is kind of academic, standard deviation above the mean. It's higher than the mean. That's all you need to know here. The other thing is that we looked at people who were consistently in the top end of the spending spectrum. We took people who were in the top 20% of spending for prescription drugs in 1 year and were also in the top 20% in prescription drug spending in the next year, and said, gee, if something happened to their coverage, they'd be in really deep trouble. And so we identified that as a potential need factor. And then we looked at illness, and there are a variety of ways that one could define need relating to illness. We took a fairly simple one. Our database allowed us to identify individuals who had common chronic illnesses, such as diabetes and heart disease, high blood pressure, and other kinds of illnesses that require maintenance medications. And so we said, well, if you have three or more of these conditions that identified over this two-year period, then you're also at greater need. Again, an arbitrary cutoff, but at least it gives us a point where we can begin to talk about how those needs are actually being met in the marketplace. This is a breakdown for each of those criteria for 1995 and 1996, and this is a year earlier than some of the other data that I've shown you, but my recent research suggests that these numbers are quite typical of later years as well. About 26% of the population, Medicare population, has personal income that is below the poverty line. Now, that may just strike you as being a wildly outrageous number, because actually only 10% of the elderly, if you use all sources of income, fall below the poverty line. But when you start to use income as an indicator of eligibility for a drug benefit, you can't use all sources of income. You can't use family income. You can't use other things. You have to focus on the income that is available to that particular individual or to the or to the spouse if the individual is married. And so these numbers are actually quite high relative to those that you'll see using the census definition of poverty income. But it's very important if you're going to use these criteria for establishing a program in Wisconsin. So relatively high proportions of our population are below the poverty line as we've defined it here. 23% of the population exhibited a persistent lack of any prescription coverage over the two-year period, and this is much lower, incidentally, than the numbers that Dave Mott gave you, about 31%, I think, who had no coverage in 1996. Well, the reason for that is that some people who have no coverage at one point in time have it for some part of the year another point in time. So, if you look at it over a longer period of time, you get a very different picture of this population than if you take a point-in-time estimate. And this one, I think, is really very important for all of us to pay attention to. We have these sources of coverage, and we make assumptions about the stability and reliability about that coverage, and it just isn't true. One-third of Medicare beneficiaries who have coverage have it only for part of the time. There are other times that they go without coverage, and I would submit that there are not only economic but also therapeutic consequences of that fact. We have, obviously, high-end individuals who are high users of prescription medications. I won't be saying much about those, but clearly that is a need definition in itself. This one might surprise you, the last, a heavy disease burden. Again, we've defined this in terms of three or more prescription or three or more chronic diseases within this two-year period. And almost half of our population had reported three or more of these chronic conditions that do, in fact, come with needs for prescription drugs. Next slide, please. Here's a targeting issue for you. If you look at the kind of orangey, whatever that color is, bar, the taller bars, you'll see that if you take a criterion of 150% or below poverty, you get very, very different numbers in terms of people in need using our criteria, but you'd find it true for other criteria as well, than if you use a lower cutoff of 100% of the federal poverty level. And it looks like the higher you go, the greater the need. And the answer, the reason for that, is that once you get down here in terms of persistent coverage or unstable coverage for those people that are below 100% of poverty, you have most of these people, a large percentage of these people are eligible and enrolled in the Medicaid program or in other programs that are available to low-income elderly in states like Pennsylvania. Also, if you note here that individuals below the poverty level actually have fewer of them have higher out-of-pocket costs, which is what you'd expect, but actually fewer of them have total spending that's as high as those who are at this slightly higher level of income. And so you can't just look at income as a kind of a linear measure of need. There is this group of individuals who are above the poverty line who by this particular set of measures and by others are demonstrably at greater need than those who are actually below the poverty line. And if we put all of these things together, what do we find? Well, we find that only 14% of our population sample, national population sample, exhibited none of the need factors that we had identified. And over half had exhibited two, three, or more than three of the need factors. And if you look at this and you cut it by income, you're going to find that you're not going to be able to meet those other needs by a simple income-based system. That's not to say that you shouldn't do it, but you should be aware of the fact that by targeting a program just on the basis of income, you're going to be leaving out a significant number of those with needs. I have a number of slides in the packet that I'm not going to be able to go over in terms of how prescription drug coverage affects use and cost. I will say one slide here that's the most important of the list. Next slide, please. Prescription coverage matters most for those who are in poor and fair health. Here we have the high bars are those in poor to fair health. This is the mean number of prescriptions filled by beneficiaries in that characteristic, good to excellent health. Some nice face validity here in our data, which researchers always like to see. You would expect people that have poor to fair health are going to have higher use than those who have excellent health. But if you look at people who have no coverage compared to full year coverage, you see a major difference. This is similar to a point that Dave Mott showed. But I would like to point out this third bar in terms of individuals who have only part year coverage and they fall between the two. These people are may not be quite as needy as those with no coverage, but they do bear scrutiny from a state perspective. Rising utilization and increased cost means that expenditures go up. There are a number of slides that are intermediate here. Here is our best estimate of what Medicare beneficiaries spent in the year 2000 per capita on prescription drugs from all sources, about double what it was in 1993. Some but not all of this increased burden has been ameliorated by prescription drug coverage. And this slide shows that that increase in drug coverage means that beneficiaries are spending less out of pocket. And this is what we're really interested in here, is making sure that those who have that real need are able to ameliorate that out of pocket spending. About 55% of all drug spending in 1993 was out of pocket, down to 45% in 1997. But the biggest burden of increased drug costs falls on beneficiaries with no drug coverage or unstable coverage. And here you can see that over 20% of individuals that have no prescription coverage, Medicare beneficiaries with no prescription coverage, spent more than 5% of their annual incomes on prescription drugs, compared to just between 6 and 7% of those who had full year coverage. And then again, this group in the middle is one that you don't want to ignore. And this is the 80-20 rule. When you get to the point of actually designing a drug benefit for a population, you have to pay attention to what the principal components of that spending are. And here you can see, and this shows over a five-year period, about 20% of the whole Medicare population has no drug coverage or has no drug spending at all. That's not likely to change even if we were to give these individuals coverage, but it's dropping a little bit. But most of the beneficiaries fall in this band of $1 to $500. Now that's gone up a little bit over the last 3 or 4 years, but there is still the majority of spending, 60%, falls in this particular range. Relatively small amounts at these higher ends, but these are the people obviously with the greatest needs. Are Medicare beneficiaries better off than in 1993? Objectively, yes, they are. More have some protection some of the time. Growth in coverage has benefited some groups more than others. Beneficiaries, a significant proportion of beneficiaries have unstable coverage, and it depends on how you measure that, but however you measure it, it's an important factor. The generosity of drug coverage varies widely. I haven't had a chance to show you that, but you have some slides in the handouts that I've provided. And that beneficiaries with unstable coverage or no coverage are at much higher risk for incurring the kinds of out-of-pocket spending that a state-level program would address. And with that, I will turn it over to our next speaker. Thank you very much.
Questions for Dr. Stewart? Raise your hand, and Jessica will be. And if you have to leave early, please drop off your evaluation and please sign in.
I've got a question. I'm involved in running the state health plan here in Wisconsin, and we've been raising the out-of-pocket maximums for individuals as well as the copays like many plans have. But I'm wondering if there's any research that's been done to take a look at whether if behavior begins to change among the users of the drugs as those maxes are reached. You know, say in our state, you have an out-of-pocket max now of $260 for the year, but once you reach that, which some people might reach in a few months, do you start seeing an accelerating curve in terms of use of drugs, or is that really not dependent upon what those maxes are or the copays are?
This is a really important question, because in order to identify any drug benefit, you're going to have to identify what's covered and what's not, and you'd like to have very specific information about what the behavioral responses are going to be to those parameters. That's a long-winded way of saying we don't have the kind of information that you need. There is clear knowledge that coverage matters in terms of inducing higher levels of utilization and higher levels of expenditure. There is no question about that at all. There is some evidence that having any type of out-of-pocket payment, a small copayment, a small copayment or other kind of payment, will have a greater impact on reducing the demand for coverage than an increase in a copayment or a coinsurance a rate for a population. But we don't have the kind of information that you need, which says if we were to change the copay from $5 to $10 for a generic, or $15 to $25 for a brand name drug, is that going to reduce expenditures by how much so that we can actually budget this? We're just starting a project with Merck Medco, which insures everybody in this country, I think, for prescription drugs. And they manage a number of different kinds of plans that have different rates of coinsurance and coverage limits. And so next year at this time, we should have a little more information about that, but we don't have it now.
Hi. When you get beyond income as a criterion for selection into coverage, and you go to non-coverage in the past or higher than average expenditures, don't you risk getting into areas where people can manipulate their behavior to gain access, and how do you respond to that?
Right. These criteria for need are not good criteria for program eligibility. Rather, what they are caveats, if you will, in terms of what happens if you use an income base. I don't think anybody has come up with an idea of limiting coverage based, if there's going to be restricted eligibility, doing it on a basis other than income. So really, these are kind of cautionary tales that if you do a cut on income, you're going to be leaving people out, and those people have real needs. And you ought to know that when you do it.